Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and top leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of Think Tank of the Air. Thank you for joining us. This is Sarah Mo, the CEO of Sleep Health Specialists and also a co-founder of Synapse. Well, we are still covering for Mr. Steve LeBeau, who is doing great with his rehab, and we're really sending him all of our love every week. But until he's back, you're stuck with me. So this week, I'm so excited for our group of guests. I've gotten to spend quite a bit of time with each of these amazing people within our community. Our first guest is Amy McDonald, who is the VP for Marketing of United Theological Seminary. She's also a lecturer at Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. And next, we have Tara Carbert, who is the founder of SheOps, a talent that focuses on helping great companies find great people. And Reggie Evans, who is the co-founder of Uncommon Media, which tells the stories of small businesses and nonprofits, especially run by women and people of color. So thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Tara, let's start with you. Tell me more about SheOps.
We are a recruiting firm focused on small to mid-sized employers and providing them with a recruiting solution that they might not find today in traditional headhunting firms.
Very cool. How long have you been in business?
Just a little over a year.
Cool. How do you like it?
I love it, but it comes with all of the fun things that being a solopreneur does.
Absolutely. Solopreneurs are such an important part of our community. I think it's not talked about frequently enough. I think, honestly, the majority of people that you meet who take that leap and who have that drive for entrepreneurship, a lot of times solopreneurs are left out of that conversation. I think that's great. So we'll talk more about that later. Amy, United Theological Seminary and professorism.
So United Theological Seminary of the Twin Cities works to train faith leaders to think, do, and change the world. And then at the University of Minnesota, I'm working with undergraduate marketing students with brand management, buyer behavior, and fundamentals of marketing.
I should add that I actually got to speak at one of Amy's classes a few years back. Her students were incredibly engaged, and you could tell that she was very loved by everybody in that class. Okay, so Reggie, tell me more about Uncommon Media.
So, we provide specifically digital communications support and photography support for small businesses and nonprofits, and we really try to focus in on women who run organizations or people of color because, you know, we all know traditionally those are the people most often left out, and whose stories are either not told or if they're all told, they're very myopic and very, you know, they're placed in certain types of boxes. So we try to tell the breadth of our experiences. So.
Interesting. So what would you say outside of the work that you're clearly doing that is meaningful within your company? What are things that you do outside of your work specifically within your community that brings you joy?
One of the big things that I spend a lot of my time on is trying to connect people of color and young people with, and people who come from low-income backgrounds with jobs and careers and kind of mentors and supports so that they can kind of live their dream, fulfill their dream, and just make money. Because it's great if people have a good heart, but if your family's starving, what's the point? So trying to get people to be able to do good, but also pay their bills and not be in debt. So that's kind of what I do in my free time, which bleeds over into my work, which is perfectly fine with me.
Yeah. So Tara, with your focus specifically with helping women in kind of underrepresented fields, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, pretty excited. I would say that the she and she ups doesn't necessarily mean that we exclusively recruit female talent, because if we did, our clients would be waiting forever to find the right hire in many instances. Mm-hmm. But my work ties into my passion, and that was very intentional when I started the business. So kind of three pillars of impact that matter to me are STEM education, trade education, and then advocacy for women in highly male populated fields.
What are some of those fields?
For me, the ones I focus on are predominantly engineering, non-software engineering, and operations roles in manufacturing, industrial, and construction settings.
Fascinating. Amy, how about you? Passion projects. What are you doing within the community right now?
Yeah, so it's been great hearing both of your stories, because I think where both of you are leaning in and growing your businesses, I'm a former solopreneur. And so in many ways, I've actually been pulling back from what I'm doing in the community. So I had an agency called Jabberlogic for 8 years, working with nonprofits and small businesses on their marketing. So really the way I'm giving back right now is spending time with my students, mentoring my students, making connections for them. Yeah.
Love it. So Reggie, I want to talk more about your thread of when you say you focus more with women and people of color. Is there any kind of specific incident, or what's your reasoning behind having this passion? What brought you to this?
Well, Sarah, I'm Black. I mean, that's honestly, that's what it is. I'm Black in America.
So yeah.
Because of that, I have a particular lens and experience with this country and with businesses. And I've been, you know, blessed and fortunate enough to be able to go to a suburban school, go to a predominantly white college, I should probably stop hitting the table, but, you know, work at different jobs. But I know that's not the case for a lot of people. And I know a lot of people who are brilliant, who went to the wrong schools, who grew up in the wrong neighborhoods, who have been continually divested from instead of invested in. So because of that, I'm going to use whatever privilege I have to help try to connect them, because there's so much out there already trying to divest from them.
That's amazing. And I totally understand that. I am Black as well, but I am biracial. So my dad's Black and my mom's white. And I hate the fact that I have to think that I am lucky to not be seen as Black by a lot of people. People think I'm Asian or Polynesian or Hawaiian and speak Spanish to me frequently. And I'm like, I speak French. I'm sorry. My mother is French. That being said, I think that it is a responsibility for the Black community of privilege to help uplift those who didn't have that. Thank you for sharing that.
Also, can I say...
Yes, please.
When I saw Amy, I was like, oh, great. I'm going to try to pretend to be smart about an area that she's done a lot of work in. So thank you for inviting us both on this podcast. So now I can't say anything else for the rest of the podcast.
You don't have to pretend. We all know you do know. Yes, she is established, and yes, she's amazing. But guess what? So are you.
I mean, yes. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yes, and.
There's a reason you're here. We only invite thought leaders and people who are impactful in this community, because that's our goal at Synapse, is to make positive connections that can only improve what's happening in Minnesota. We have these silos. We have these large, tall silos where people who work within a specific community remain in those silos and don't jump outside of it and have conversations with others. So you belong here, trust me. So I feel like I have to throw in here that Amy and I go way back. In fact, when you hear stories of me when I go off on my tangents about sleep, she is a big part of the reason that I even started my company. She was an inspiration to me when she started Jabberlogic. We're old college roommates, and when she started her company and started winning award after award, and she is in the Real Power 50 and this and that, and I said, you know, I want to do that too. And she said, you can, and you should. You have something that this community needs. So I'll always be grateful to you for that. Thank you, Rumi.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, a big part of your success was the fact that you chose to have a model of doing something that was giving back. Mm-hmm. You worked specifically with small businesses and nonprofits to help their marketing, including my business. Tell me about that path of saying, I'm going to do it this way to help others.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of layers to it. And really quick, addressing your comment, like when I read your background and was hearing about your business, where my brain went is, I've closed my business, so why am I here to have this conversation? And so I'm really excited for us
so
to.
So you're like, saying both of us should not be here. It should just be.
But okay. We all did it. So I did it too.
We're walking out the door now. Oh, there, we close the door.
Now it's time to sit at the table.
So we all did it.
We all did it. We're done. We opened the doors, we closed the doors, opened more doors. And actually, I mean, that really was why I started it. I had worked in the corporate world. I worked for a Fortune 500. I then worked for a couple of agencies. And there were all of these voices and stories that weren't being heard. And it felt like the corporate world was just so toxic. I was seeing racist and sexist behaviors in the workplace that were just normalized. And I felt like there had to be another way to do business. And it felt like there had to be clients out there that also wanted to work with organizations doing business differently.
I would echo that wholly. I'm too corporate, large, Fortune 10 in some instances, sitting on the sidelines of hiring, a witness to feedback post-interview, a witness to bias even before we got to posting a position, and constantly pushing back and saying, but wait, you're making a whole bunch of assumptions about what this career pattern or what these titles or what these colleges mean without even talking to the humans on the other side of this process. And from the inside out, when working on, say, diversity recruiting initiatives, feeling really inauthentic in some cases, where the career site reflects something that's not reality inside the doors, or the values on the wall, which isn't true of everywhere I worked. I've worked for some great places, but the value words on the wall were not lived every day inside the doors. And I felt like I could have a greater impact on the world if I went out into it and got outside of that insular thinking.
Did you feel something similar, Reggie?
Actually, no, I had great experiences. I consider myself very privileged and blessed that after college, I worked at the city of St. Paul in the human rights department, worked with some amazingly talented and smart people who I still talk to today. And then after that, I worked at an education nonprofit where they really did invest in, you know, diversity, but specifically inclusion. It was through that experience that I really got a lot of background and knowledge on, you know, hiring practices, implicit bias, addressing the channels to employment, and people saying there's not enough people out there, then it's like, okay, let's step back and recognize what's limiting people from even getting into those educational into that field to get into that job. So, and then even I recently was working at Hennepin County, and I worked with some really brilliant and talented people who were very committed to inclusion and very committed to living out values that you have. And so I've been very, very fortunate to have that. And I know it's very atypical. So for me, it was more about just going to conferences, going to events. And I know we live in Minnesota, but just seeing a bunch of white people.
Yeah.
And for me, specifically in social media is where I do most of my work. And to know that for the most part, all the things that are trending and fashionable on social media were created by communities of color. But then when it comes down to making money, it's, you know, brands hiring white people to fill that role. So stepping back and saying, okay, what can I do to help connect the people who create the culture and help them benefit from the creation they've already done, instead of somebody who is still, I mean, stealing from the culture, not always in the most, you know, in, looking for words here, only had 3 cups of coffee, so I needed always consciously, but
right.
You know, you're being able to benefit from the work and creativity of somebody else who's not in your community. And so that's really what compelled me to leave.
What is the word you're looking for? Because now I can't think of it. Appropriation?
Yeah, I'd say that.
That's it, maybe. So Amy, I love what you brought up earlier about toxic behaviors being normalized in the workplace. We're all so used to it. And with that comes a feeling of lack of power and complacency. What do we do about that? How do we even begin to address those changes that need to be made without having everybody just leave the workforce and starting to work for themselves? They don't have to deal with it.
I can only speak to what's worked for me.
Yeah.
Lots of therapy. Yep. All the therapy.
Get it all.
Purse wine. Yeah. All the wine. but then as I'm grounding myself, having direct, honest conversations and trusting. I know I'm seeing Sarah's face right now. Her eyes are huge and she's like, let's talk about honest conversations. Because
yes.
That's also part of my privilege, right? Like, I have the privilege to have honest conversations about sexism with white men that are baby boomers and Gen Xers. There's a conversation that happened just a couple of weeks ago where a team that I'm working with, I tend to get most of the administrative tasks, or I'm the one who has to organize all the things. And one of my colleagues was like, can we talk about sexism for a second? Is it because Amy's in her mid-30s and she's young and blonde? Or is it because she's the right person to do the administrative tasks? They're like, we thought you loved that. And I was like, who loves administrative tasks? Like, no one does. It's because I've had to do them my entire career.
Yep.
I have to be 5 times more prepared. I have to know every detail of everything, or I'm not good enough to be in that room. And so starting to have the courage within myself to have those conversations, and when they don't go well, not allowing that to affect me and being willing to walk away. Like, it's the ultimate negotiation power to start changing what that narrative looks like. And I want to own that in that response, there's a lot of privilege that needs to be unpacked.
I would agree that the toxicity for me, again, place of privilege, is being able to talk about it, and therapy giving me the courage to, you know, fully know that where I'm coming from is in line with my values. And if people disagree with me, I'm willing to have I'm willing to not be liked anymore. I'm not that I don't care in a detached way, but I'm willing to not be liked because these things matter so much to me. That if I'm contrarian and you don't, as a white male baby boomer, want to see the reality of what's going on, doesn't mean I'm going to let you erase my reality.
I love that.
And I also like to add one thing. I just talked about how I haven't really experienced it that much. But one thing I have known to be super effective is kind of like coalition building inside spaces. And kind of how Amy and Tara were talking about using the privilege you do have to help kind of sometimes shield people. Because I know when Amy was talking, I thought about a meeting I was in with a woman colleague who was like manager level, and I was not manager level. And then there's another male colleague who was manager level. And we were, you know, pitching ideas to a department we were working with, and the woman said something, and the guy on the other end, he completely ignored what she said. And like 3 minutes later, the male manager said the exact same thing. He was like, oh, that's interesting. And me and the woman, we both looked at each other like,
did somebody say that?
but kind of, you know, later on we were talking, and there are some, you have to sometimes understand who the person is too, and like what you're working up against and the best way to navigate that. And so for that situation, when the woman colleague and I were talking, we realized that the best method, because it was someone who probably will never get it, was just to kind of understand who they are and figure out how to navigate sometimes around them,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or in a way where it's like, we need to get this work done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not the big fight right now. But that coalition building, in some areas I'd step up and kind of take the brunt of stuff, or if it was something I knew he would have some pushback against, I'd be like, I'm going to pitch it, because I know if you pitch it, you're going to get heat unnecessarily. But if I pitch it, he'll be like, oh yeah, let's get some coffee out. You know, but understanding what privilege I have in a situation and building a coalition so that people could be like, okay, in this situation, I have a privilege. And so then I can bear the brunt of that so that we can move forward with our shared mutual goals. And I think that's one way I found to be really effective and kind of a way to shield others.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, it's a big behemoth of a monster, so.
I like that, though.
It's all the ways, but I found coalition building to be really successful.
And an important step, because, again, recognizing if you can or cannot have an impact on a certain person or a certain person's mentality is huge. Mm-hmm. Because think of that waste of time where now you found an effective way to still have your team's intelligence be understood. So also on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and touch more on your earlier mention on diversity and inclusion. We'll be right back.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
All right, welcome back. We are here today with Amy McDonald, Tara Carbert, and Reggie Evans having conversations about things that may be lacking in the workplace, reasons that we get involved in our community, diversity and inclusion. Reggie, I love what you just said about using your privilege to help a female coworker of yours.
Tell me. She was actually a manager, which, I mean, again, shows how screwed up some of these isms are.
Right.
And these, because it's like, if anyone should be ignored, it should be the rookie guy
yep.
with the glasses. But no, it's the woman who's been there for a while, who's earned her stripes. And yeah, so.
And it's still put on the back burner. But that whole process of, you know, forming coalitions and using your power to bring others forward, I think is really a driving force of Synapse. And that is something that we're trying to do within our community and hope that others will recognize that as well. And have fun meeting all of these amazing other caregivers in our community and bring them forward as well. So you did mention earlier too about diversity and inclusion and having honest conversations about what is happening in the workplace. And when we think about diversity inclusion, or when I do, I think of almost like a cute little Band-Aid, something where somebody's brought in to make it look like you care and such and such. And I think there's so much work that needs to be done in the understanding even of what it even means and the difference of the two. So what are some of your guys' experiences with that?
So many.
From just back to the therapy.
I know, I'm like trying to process all of the stories right now.
Yeah. So again, that whole employer brand thing and being part of the recruiting teams, feeling like there was some level of inauthenticity or that there suddenly was a business case for diversity. And we're not doing it because it's the right thing to do, but that we need some bottom line ROI on mm-hmm. why the population inside our company has to reflect the population outside the walls. Frustrating in some ways. And I think the inclusion piece of it has come in the last few years and been amplified. But in my mind, it's an afterthought. And I want to see inclusion kind of, I read something today, and of course, it's going to escape me where, that talked about inclusion being the second step. And I think that's a little bit backwards, because if we aren't inclusive, we're not going to maintain diverse communities, diverse workplaces, diverse friendships, if we're not including the people who are already there. And I think we'll drive diversity away.
And I think kind of looking at an opposite lens. So one of the lessons I do for my brand management class is we talk about historic ads, and we talk about, we look at ads from 1900 to today, and what are the situations, who was in the room that would approve some of these ads? And we're talking about like racist Kool-Aid ads. We are talking about Heinz ads that talk about how it's no longer socially acceptable to beat your wife. Like words like that are actually in the ads.
I want to come to this class. Can we sit in?
Absolutely. I'm teaching it again this fall. Starts on September 3rd. But it's really important to say who's in the room, who has a voice, what is influencing their voice, and ultimately what is their motivation in the communications, whether it's conscious or subconscious, and then how does it influence some of the things that you were talking about?
It's amazing how much influence advertising has.
I saw Mad Men. I know what's going on.
Twice.
It is. It's coming from somebody who has no business background, which has very highly influenced my ability as a business owner in a negative or positive way, it's great to be able to be authentic, but at the same time, I have a healthcare background. I had to learn everything from the ground up. Advertising and marketing and all of these concepts of somebody else knows my brain before I do, that freaked me out. And now we're to the place where, you know, I have meetings with clients frequently and talk about sleep. That's why they hire me, and have many times had people come back and be like, oh my God, now I have all these things in my feeds about CPAP and this thing that can go in there and you're snoring and this and that. And I'm like, your phones are listening to you. This is a real thing. All right. So as a social media person, Reggie, what are your thoughts on that?
I have so many thoughts. I am, and I was having, you know, like I said, I just came from a meeting with a fellow consultant, and we talked about social media for a little bit. And I'm actually very, very social media hesitant and or anti-social media, because I understand the impact, the negative impact it can have and it does have on us and in society. And Facebook is incredibly evil. Facebook is too big, and they know too much. And I know how much they know because I use Facebook to target and advertise. And there's so much that things that are unchecked with social media. And it's not the same way in European countries. Like Europe, they have social media more or less unlocked. Canada does. But here in America, we just kind of let them do their own thing. And they can be incredibly intrusive. Technology can be incredibly intrusive. And so, and I think too, again, I'm Black. And so I'm always skeptical of big entities knowing as much as they can about me. And I'm always kind of not trusting because I've seen historically that being used to, you know, discriminate, being used to disenfranchise people. And so, you know, just as a human, I'm worried about it. But then as a person of color, I'm like, okay, when is the other shoe going to drop?
Exactly.
And we saw that with Russia when they were like using ads targeted toward people of color,
it's not
riling them up.
Paranoia.
So that,
it's not paranoia. This is statistic and fact. Also, when you see the narratives spun in the news when another young Black male was shot and they represent him as a criminal, where actual literal murderers, white males who killed their entire family, they say, oh, he would have done anything for his family. But
he was a good guy.
He was a good guy.
We've never seen him be
angry. Would never have thought. And yet he murdered his
offspring.
He was a
quiet man who kept to himself.
Yeah, because he was plotting.
He was plotting. He was plotting to shoot all of Las Vegas.
And he couldn't be talking about it openly. Actually, he could have, because usually they can talk about it and be like, oh.
Yeah. And it would be fine. Yeah.
We just thought that he was mentally disturbed that day.
Yeah. Oh, right. Mental illness. Ugh. So sad that only white people suffer from it.
And so, even still, they don't get, like, if it's like, oh, we thought he was mentally disturbed, it's like, so then can we talk about resources for mental? You know, it's like, it's just a scapegoat, but it's not actually like, we need to invest
solution.
In this thing.
Yeah. Exactly. There's no solution. Well, on that note, no, I love it because it is, everything is so intertwined. And we have these conversations because as we get older, we learn that our work lives and our home lives are not separate the way that we were taught when we were younger. You have your home life and then you go to work and then you come home and that's your home. It's not separate. Everything is intertwined. Everything is engaged with all parts of our lives. And I talk a lot about that with like sleep and health in general as well. This, your sleep and your health, physical, mental, emotional, is brought with you to work and it's brought home from work. And it's something that we have to pay more attention to if we want to have healthier work and home lives. It's hard right now.
you scratched a little nerve for me there. Both my parents have passed, and I look back on those years where they compartmentalized work and home, and I think, man, there was like a third, two-thirds if I count when they were sleeping, of my parents' lives that I knew almost nothing about. I knew a little bit, the projects they got excited about or, you know, the boss who frustrated them that day, but what they were working on, accomplishing professionally, we didn't talk about it. And I have a 21-year-old son. We're talking about goals twice a week now, both for my business and for his studies and what he may or may not want to do with his life, because I miss that with my folks. And I think it's important, that whole self, total being. I'm 100% bought into it.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to have hard lines between those things anymore.
That's so interesting. I tried to think about my parents, and my dad was a shift worker, which probably was a good part of the reason that it was acceptable that I had terrible sleep habits. I was up all night watching movies and such, and he was okay with that because he was like, yeah, it's my fault. But I at least knew about his work, and we were having those conversations. It's interesting to think about conversations that didn't happen within families.
Yeah, I mean, in my family, I now have a couple of sisters that have their undergraduate degrees, but I was the first one in my immediate family to go to a Big Ten university. I'm the only one in my immediate family to have a master's. And I mean, I almost didn't apply to college. The reason I applied, Mr. Eum, shout out. He's a high school teacher of mine and still a dear friend. Mm-hmm. He checked in on me every 3 weeks until I graduated high school, and I applied to one college, Michigan State. Because I knew I'd get in, and I was like, fine, I'll do it. But like, I thought I was going to be a waitress. Like, and to wake up in my early 30s and be like, I've done the things. Like, I'm teaching, and I've started a business, and what do I do now? Like, what is that next thing?
What is the next thing?
All the therapy. Yeah. No, but seriously, like...
That's how you figure it out, right?
Yeah. And the wine.
And all the wine. Because, yeah, you get to a place where, like, your family systems show up in the workplace with your interpersonal relationships. The idea you had of who you are and who you wanted to become and who you turned into show up in the workplace.
I agree. That's, I think, a big part of why, you know, we have such strong relationships with our coworkers. And it's out there. Anybody who's ever worked in any kind of office setting has seen the memes, you know, when you show up and your work wife is ready to talk smack about the person you hate too. And then it's the picture of everybody like, yes. Or, you know, when your work husband is out of the office for a week and you feel empty, those interpersonal relationships absolutely are so important.
That might go back to what Reggie was saying earlier about building the coalition. Like, you have that coalition at work. You know who your allies are. You know who your champions are. You know who your advocates are. And when one little piece of that three-legged stool is missing, I know I fall over at work. That's probably been the hardest thing of solopreneurship. Like, I called you, Sarah, to rescue me last week, and you totally did. So thank you.
Absolutely. And ditto, it went both ways. I love that analogy of when one piece of the stool is missing, you tip over. I feel like we need to be able to nurture that at work, but at the same time, I'm still so disappointed with the toxic behaviors that we were talking about earlier, where it's so hard. Like, where do we spend our attention when we're also expected to do our jobs?
We get all the great people to go work for great companies. Like, that's exactly why I'm doing this. Like, I think there's a lot of people who don't know that there are impact corps, there are for-benefit corps, mm-hmm. and then they know nonprofit,
love it,
and they know for-profit. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people, if you say, do you know what a B corporation mm-hmm. is? Like, what? What's that? That's a thing? And they don't even know it exists. And they're out there. Companies that are doing good. The triple bottom line. People, planet, purpose.
How do we tell them?
Just keep amplifying the voices of the good companies. Yeah. And that's how I do it.
I know there's... in NORCARD, Social Enterprise Alliance, Twin Cities.
What's it called?
Social Enterprise Alliance.
Social Enterprise Alliance.
And there's so many organizations who do amazing. All around here. I met with this woman, Mary, who runs kind of like marketing organization, and she was at a tech dump, which is an organization, you know, that recycles mm-hmm. electronics, but then
Amanda
also,
LaGrange.
Yeah, pays, you know, people who were previously incarcerated, give them mm-hmm. job skills, give them, you know, paycheck. And she was at the robot fashion show that was maybe 2 months ago or something.
Yeah, the Maker Faire, was the Maker Faire tied to that? Or Works Museum
I
in some
so,
way?
Yeah. And she won a gift card, but then we met for coffee and she actually gave me the gift card. And I was able to use that gift card to buy a laptop from... Tech dump for one of the young people I work with, you know, and so it's like there are companies and organizations who do great work, give you quality products, but you're advancing some goodwill. And so, yeah, Social Enterprise Alliance and, you know, different places like that that can highlight and elevate that. And then it's on us to keep amplifying that. But then also, I mean, you can love somebody all day, but if you're not supporting them financially, you know, and you're able to, then what's all that mouth service? So, you know, yeah, really amplifying and supporting. And again, I think that goes back to coalition building and, you know, networks and communities and all that fun stuff.
I think the financial piece is so important because, especially in the worlds we're talking about, and also I talk about benefit corporations in my brand management class. but like in this world, scarcity of resources is such a thing. And people internalize that. And again, when we talk about how you show up with your family systems or scarcity of resources mentality or all of those things, it impacts how you're treating your employees, if you're healthy for the community. And so it is so important that people are being paid what they're worth. And I'll own, like, when I look at many of the mistakes I made as a solopreneur, I had a handful of employees. The largest we were at one point was 10, and I wasn't healthy. I wasn't charging enough. I was working too much. I was expecting too much out of them. And if as business leaders, as community leaders, we're not doing the hard work within ourselves to be healthy, we can't expect them to show up healthy, and we perpetuate the toxic workplaces. And it sucks to say that. Like, I was part of that, but I was.
Yeah, it's hard as you try to be a positive. When you're in a situation where everything is on you, it's really easy to miss that when it changes. I know I've definitely been through that too. So I want to ask you more about the Social Enterprise Alliance. Is that something that people can join? Is that something that
I know you can, if you have a social enterprise or an organization that wants, I mean, I think from the sparkle in Amy's eyes, I'm pretty sure she knows more information than I do. So I'm going to just punch it over to her.
I actually ran into Scott Cole, who's one of the board members and founders.
Oh, cool.
But it's basically a group of social entrepreneurs. So they work alongside Impact Hub. They partner really closely with them. They partner closely with the Finnovation Lab. So a lot of events and resources for social entrepreneurs.
Neat.
And for me, one of the reasons I kind of am slightly more involved with them is because there are so many people I run into who are people of color or come from disinvested backgrounds who want to do great things. And they think the only way to do that is to be starving or to be poor or to run a nonprofit, but you can't take that much money or you can't have a good salary. And it's like, no. You can make money and still do great stuff. There's, you know, like in using that as a resource and using that,
love that,
as, you know, like, look, they're making money. You can make money and still do good. Because I mean, again, you know, my history in this country, knowing that certain communities are disinvested in, then what sense does that make once you're going through college, fighting all these systems, finally kind of being at a point where you can run something, and then you settle for a job where you're not going to be making that much money. You're only perpetrating this low income lifestyle. You're only perpetrating not being able to set your family up for, you know, greater. You're only perpetrating not being able to buy a house, you know, get out of debt, set up a college fund, you know, invest in stocks and bonds. So then it's like, okay, yes, that's great that you've achieved this personal, like, enlightenment, but what does that mean for your kids? Your kids can't eat off of how smart you are.
Reggie.
So, I mean, that's why, I mean, again, that's why I do the work that I do, but it's great to be able to highlight Social Enterprise Alliance and other, you know, organizations like that to be like, you can do great stuff and still get paid. You better get paid.
So. Yes. Reggie, I'm curious about your word choice. You say disinvested, and I really like that. Most people say disenfranchised. Yeah. Is that a deliberate, I have a deliberate word choice twist. I do, instead of saying women in male-dominated fields, I say women in highly male-populated fields, after somebody helped me recognize, hey, women are dominating, right? Is there a reason you use disinvested instead of disenfranchised?
I think for me, it's to really hone in on the fact that it's a very, yes, it's disadvantaged, and they're disenfranchised, but at the same time, it's very specifically, people are not investing money,
correct,
resources,
based.
Time, political will. They're very much taking the investment away from them. I mean, I worked in education for a bit. If education is like prime, like how it's like, oh, okay, we're gonna, you know,
you're in this zip code.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. So no after school programming. Not really that many great job opportunities. Your roads kind of suck. You know, this we're going to move that over to these areas. Yes, it's tax related, but I mean, at the same time, it's like they have great schools. They have PTAs that can raise thousands of dollars in one night. So why are they getting
intentionally?
Yeah. So it's disinvested. It's taking resources from those who need it the most. And that's why I try to use as much as I can.
I really like it. I'm going to start using it.
Awesome. All right. On that note, you guys, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
Hello. All right, you guys, we are back with Amy McDonald, Tara Carbert, and Reggie Evans. We were just talking about Reggie's specific word placement with disinvested as opposed to disenfranchised. Amy, what were you just saying?
Yeah, so Reggie, you were talking about all of the things that are taken away from different communities around resources, and you were talking specifically about political, social, and economic capital. Mm-hmm. And that's the term is used in a lot of social justice movements it's not just disenfranchised, it's not just marginalized populations, it's an intentional deinvestment or divestment from populations.
I really like the phrasing, and maybe I've heard it before, but it hasn't struck me because I wasn't such an intimate setting with people using the phrase, and it reminds me of this episode of Killer Mike. Is that the name of the show? Does anyone watch it? Netflix? Mm-hmm. Where he was in Atlanta and talking about Black-owned businesses, and he tried to live for 24 hours by only going to Black-owned businesses. Mm. And at the end of the segment, essentially, it was like a dollar in the Black community stays in the Black community maybe 3 days, and 23 days, I think, in the Chinese community. It's certainly a series worth watching.
Interesting.
But as he was going along his journey, one of the restaurants he went to was like, "Well, where do you get your meat? White Farm. Mm-hmm. Where do you get your?" And he just didn't eat, and he slept on a park bench because he couldn't find a Black-owned hotel. Couldn't go 24 hours. Only spending dollars in black-owned businesses.
I don't like that. Sorry.
But that's immediately when I was hearing the word disinvested, I was like, oh, well, that it just reminded me of that Killer Mike series.
Killer Mike. I was thinking Magic Mike, and that was very different.
Way different. I mean, both worth watching.
Both important. Killer Mike. All right. I wrote it down. I'm going to check that out. Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
So I think another important word that we keep kind of dancing around is intentionality, like the intentional. Mm-hmm. And that for now really feels hard in this country. The intentional that a lot of us are just learning about. Some of us are educated on race relations in America, and we know that this is written into the laws of the land. Some people are literally just learning this, and that is because written into the laws of the land is what we choose to teach in our education systems. And that choice is to continue perpetuating this cycle where most people will not be taught the history of this country. So the intentionality around continuing to keep these cycles of power where they are is something that's being brought to people's attention recently. And of course, 2020 is a coming. And there are a lot of different thoughts on a lot of different things. But I do love that what we've seen within our Minnesota community even recently is that intentionality of bringing these things to the forefront of people's attention.
It matters so much. I think, Sarah, you and I had an awkward conversation the day of our first meeting where my own lack of awareness of race relations and how systemic things were just a couple of years ago. Black Lives Matter mattered greatly to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
what's
the big deal, right? And some people just responded with what's the big deal and left it at that. I went further. I read cases. I looked at judges' records. I just dive into things. And I used the phrase, I woke up with you, and you were like, you don't get to say that. And I was like, whoa, what? But my friend said, and I was on, I still have to watch my language. I have to be really open to that feedback. If Black Lives Matter had not happened, I would, the attention, I would not have paid mm-hmm. attention.
Yeah.
And can I, sorry, I just want to butt in real quick and say shout out to Black women, because Black women are usually on the forefront of so much social change.
Yes.
And they go so unrecognized, so shout out to Black women.
Agreed.
Love it.
Thanks.
And Sarah collected, thanks for every Black woman here.
I think your point about how it's like rooted in our education system mm-hmm. is so mm-hmm. important. When we talk about how all of the topics we brought to the table today happen, I mean, it's years and years and layers of systems that created that. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like part of what Synapse is trying to do is untangle that and elevate some of those voices and have some of the hard conversations. And then going back to the story I shared about my brand management class and how we talk about historic ads, part of it is to show them that this has been rooted in everything mm-hmm, mm-hmm. the U.S. is about for as long as the U.S. has been around.
Exactly.
And before then.
That's and before then. Well, before then. Yes.
Yeah. I was again, talking, having a meeting with my friend Tisidra, who runs Strong and Starlike, again, a Black woman who does amazing stuff. And we were talking about, the Supreme Court just made a decision on gerrymandering. And we talk about how, kind of like you all were talking about, for some people it's like, whoa, what's happening? What is America becoming? But when you actually peel back and see the full history, you realize this is what America has always been. I mean, the Voting Rights Act was, 1965? Mm-hmm. After slavery ended, Black people started voting, and America was like, hold on.
No. We didn't say
and
that.
And so they introduced, the poll tax, they introduced reading tests to disenfranchise communities of color. And think about the Japanese internment camp, not even 100 years ago. Last century, and how all these people's rights have been infringed on for so long, but yet because of what's not talked about, what's not being educated to our kids, most people don't even connect the dots. And so everything is so separate with random dates, because we remember dates, but we don't connect everything. And so we have this false view of what's happening. And so then, therefore, we're not adequately prepared to fight against it, because we think this is a one-off thing, when it's like, no, honey, this is connected. Mm-hmm. This has been in the heart of, enslavement, taking land from indigenous people. That's how America became America.
Right.
America didn't build this country. Everyone else built it in America. It was like, thank
just
you.
Took it.
Actually, they said, get away from me.
Yeah. No, they said, actually, they said, now you get to go on reservations and you don't
they
get
said,
to vote.
Are you talking back? That's what they said.
Go away now.
Do you know that Anne Frank and Martin Luther King Jr. were born in the same year?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Think about that, how history is portrayed as so long ago.
Yeah. And that we actually talked about World War II and how Germany really is, doing a pretty good job of coming to terms with the evils they've done. And yet and still, we barely talk about Japanese internment camps, which happened around the same time. The same time we were fighting this enemy who were interning people, taking jobs and, livelihoods from certain types of people, we were doing the exact same thing.
We still are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally, now it's happening.
And
yeah.
We're not giving them soap or toothpaste, and we're taking them from their parents, and we're making them the bad guy. But we don't connect those dots of saying, this. We just fought a war about this not too long ago, but yet we're doing the same things. But we're America. We wouldn't do that. These people are obviously bad people, because we would never do that, because we're so great. So,
and that again comes down to the education system.
Yep.
And the education system certainly failed me when it came to civil rights. Mm-hmm. I took a long road trip this year mm-hmm. and visited lots of civil rights museums and was angry. I didn't know about the Little Rock Nine. I didn't know much about all of the lynchings. I went to the Legacy Museum, and I went to the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, and I learned more in my two-hour tours of those than I probably did in all of my civil rights history covered mm-hmm. in February mm-hmm. once a year, all of growing up.
Mm-hmm. And again, intentionality.
Just because, for me, lynching is so relevant, because I'm actually related to Emmett Till, and so he was a young man in Mississippi yeah. in the 50s who allegedly whistled at a white woman, but then we found out she lied about the whole thing.
Of course.
But that's my grandma's cousin. And so, I learned about that, and then actually during one of the civil rights presentations or Black history presentations when everyone was doing Malcolm X and Martin King, I brought in like news clippings and stuff of Emmett Till because that, you know, it's hey guys, that was like, I think I was a little bit older than his age at that time, but it's like, and some of my friends used to joke because I allegedly sometimes do idiotic things and I'm an idiot. And especially when I get with friends, I, you know, if they say do something stupid, I might be like, okay. But, you know, so it's like I could really see myself. Of course, I probably wouldn't whistle at a white woman because my parents raised me better than that. But you know,
it
just
could
like
have
this,
been you.
Yeah.
It could have been you.
And I mean, the fact is he didn't even do that. So it could have been me definitely by being a black man in Mississippi in the 50s. So it's just like you were saying, it's people don't have the full scope of the thing.
Or like, even the timeline that we were talking about.
Two generations removed from that.
This is not that long ago that these things were allowed. Not even happening, but completely allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And you see these pictures of, you know, no offense, you two, but a lot of things that have been brought into the news recently is about the women, the white women who were a huge driving force in continuing racism. The anger and the pictures of them screaming and throwing rocks. It's like...
White women do better.
Do a lot better. You know, it's the one and only time there's not a lot of victim blaming is when the accused is a black male.
Of course.
It's ridiculous.
I know.
Like, oh, hashtag. Believe her because it's the perpetrator that's being accused
is a black male. Yes. But you're right. Any other situation that...
What were you wearing?
Yeah. How much did you drink? Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So what do we do about it?
Yes.
Yeah, and
I honestly feel sometimes that it's just too far gone, and I worry. Like, it's not, it feels so insurmountable, but I can't do nothing.
And I mean, I guess I would say, too, it's always been insurmountable, but that's never stopped people before. And I think our whole purpose in life is to leave this place better than we came in. And so it's just like having those communities, supporting each other. Sometimes your role might be a support. You might not be on the front lines, but I kind of gonna steal what Amy has been saying, all the things. We do all the things. We have people who are marching. We have people who support their business. We have people who are calling politicians. We have people who run. We have people who call stuff out. We have people who stay in the background and are just supporters, who just cook for people, who love on people. We do all the things. We go to therapy. Black people need to go to therapy. And it doesn't make you weak. It makes you human. And so I think we do all the things and we just keep doing it and keep learning and keep trying, because if we don't, they're going to just keep doing what they've always been doing.
And I think this actually brings segment one full circle, like, you know, using the story you had, Reggie, of you and that woman manager. I mean, all of the dynamics that we are feeling in the workplace stem from the topics that we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whether it's a nonprofit or a for-profit that's starting a meeting by honoring the native land in which the meeting is taking place on, all the way to, like, what are the systemic issues that are preventing us from having real conversations right now, from you hearing that voice. I think that's where some of those brave conversations come back in, whether they're one-on-one or group. It's that coalition building you were talking about, but rooting it back into the things we know have been preventing us from moving forward.
Which oftentimes is the overwhelm, I think you're mm-hmm. acknowledging, because mm-hmm. it can be overwhelming. There's so many things.
I mean, literally, take today's news. The Supreme Court voted, okay, we're not going to allow the census question right now because we know the way you tried to put it in was false. They didn't even say it can't be put in. It's just saying, right now, we're not accepting that. But the other end, they're like, yeah, gerrymander, all y'all want politicians. And we know, you know, like, we can't trust politicians to gerrymander in that accurate way, because they're not going to. And so it's like, oh, we have a small win in this area, but this humongous loss in another area. So it's like, and then we still have to watch the small win, because that was just a small victory. It's not set in stone. So like you said, it can feel very overwhelming. And so sometimes, honestly, it is. It's like, okay, hey, you know what? I need to take a break. Let me hang out with my community. Let me refresh. Let us laugh. Let us cry. Let us hug. Let us eat some food, drink some coffee. And then
let me go find the good, all the good, because there's lots of it, too.
There is, but I do like what you said about, you know, everybody should be going to therapy. Everybody should be going to therapy.
Is that the takeaway from today?
Yes.
We should all go to therapy.
Just go to therapy. Even medically, it was recently discovered that trauma is inherited genetically. It's in our genes. If something happens, so when you think about the Black community, think about slavery, that genetic trauma passed down through our ancestors that we receive and have those days where it's like, why can I not be mad? It's in your genes. History of sexual abuse, history of poverty and struggle, all of these things. It's not just the Black community. Anybody who has ever inherited trauma from people before them who have gone through these things, it is in you. It's not something that people should be ashamed of or feel scared of. It just needs to be addressed. It needs to be cared for so that it can heal. And that stigma is really
so
kind of...
you can't pass that down.
Yep, you
because,
need
I
to.
Because, I mean, again, coming from the Black community, there's so much we don't talk about. Mm. So then we pass stuff down, but nobody has any knowledge of what's happening or why it's happening or how I can handle this or
yes.
how should I deal with it.
What do I feel this
way?
So
then they pass it down. And then, you know, like, it's a lot. And, I mean, I can't even speak for women because I mean, yes, I'm a Black male, but I'm a male. So that means I have some stuff. I don't have to deal with certain things. There are a lot of stuff I don't deal with.
Guest idea.
Yes.
Have you read the book, My Grandmother's Hands?
I don't think so.
Resma, the last name starts with an M, M-A.
My grandmother's hands.
But Resma is one of the leading researchers on racial trauma that's passed down through the genes.
Awesome. Is she local?
He's local.
He, Resma, my grandmother's hands.
Actually, he was at one of the Synapse parties at the Russian Museum.
Oh, maybe we have met. I'm sorry, Resma. I hope you're not listening to this.
You hope Resma's listening. Can I call you and be like, I'm on. What date?
Exactly. All right, you guys, we just have a few minutes left, so I just want to start with saying thanks for coming on and having these awesome conversations, but also thank you for your input and your expertise in your fields. We're going to go through real quick and see how everybody can find you if they have more questions for you personally. Amy?
Yeah, you can email me at amcdonald, like the fast food restaurant, at unitedseminary.edu. And then I'm on all the social channels, but similar to Reggie, I'm like, I have a love-hate relationship right now, so email's probably best.
I can be contacted at T Carbert, and that's C-A-R-B-E-R-T, at she. People ask me how to spell she all the time, so I'm just going to do it.
Spell it out.
S-H-E-O-P-S. talent.com. So tcarbert@sheopstalent.com. I am most active on LinkedIn in terms of social channels, but Sheops is present on all.
Perfect. And Tara is spelled T-E-R-R-A.
And for me, I love Twitter. I love it. You can find me there at Reg, so R-E-G underscore Delano, D-E-L-A-N-O. You can also email me r.delano, D-E-L-A-N-O, 28@gmail.com. Also find me on LinkedIn. Those are the places where I like to be contacted. If you reach out to me on Facebook and I don't know you, that's my personal space, bro.
Word.
LinkedIn it is. All right, you guys, thank you again, and we will see you all. Actually, no, we won't see you next week. It's the 4th of July. We're going to take a little pause and celebrate this country that needs so much work, but we will see you back on July 11th. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.